And we're going to take your calls this hour with Mitch Horwitz as we talk about superstitions, questions, and maybe your own personal superstition. Check in with us next on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour, we'll have open lines for you. We're with Mitch Horwitz now talking about superstitions. Mitch, you had mentioned Swedenborg. That is Emanuel Swedenborg from the late 1600s into the 1700s. And, you know, he wrote books on the afterlife, heaven and hell. He was a mystic. He was a philosopher. He was one of the first, wasn't he?
Oh, he really was. In many ways, Swedenborg was the granddaddy of the New Age. He thrilled people in the 1600s, 1700s. He was a Swedish scientist and mystic. He would go into trance states and he would channel messages from the spirit world, much like an Edgar Cayce did in the 20th century. And he created these vast works of communications from the spirit world. He kind of blew apart Western spirituality. He talked about the afterlife as being this realm that was composed of these different levels, and things that we did here on Earth were mirror images of things that went on in the spirit world. And he taught the principle that basically thoughts are things, and that a thought in some ways is the most material, most concrete thing in the universe. So Swedenborg was the father of positive thinking, the father of New Age spirituality. The world would look much different without him.
Indeed, indeed. And he lived until his 80s, which I find to be remarkable. I always thought that they said people in those days would live, they were old at 50.
Yeah, it was quite rare. I mean, he was an extraordinarily robust man, probably produced 40 books. There was nothing ordinary about him. He was really remarkable.
So what's up with Donald Trump? Does he have any occult of interests?
He does, in a way. He speaks very forthrightly of his love for the book, The Power of Positive Thinking, by the Reverend Norman Vincent Peale. Now, here it is in a nutshell. The Power of Positive Thinking is really a popularized version of Swedenborg. If you want to know how to apply Swedenborg's principles to your life, read that book. It's filled with great ideas. Trump spoke very earnestly of his interest in the book. He said it really put him into business. He attended Marble Collegiate Church, where the author Norman Vincent Peale presided for many, many years. And Peale was a conservative Methodist minister, not the kind of guy that you would ever say was a cult. But the fact is, Peale was reading things that were inspired by Swedenborg or other mystical writers, and he was reprocessing them into language that the church-going American public could accept. It's one of the greatest works of popular metaphysics ever written. I would tell everybody listening, if you haven't already, read The Power of Positive Thinking. That's the book that Donald Trump swears by.
You have a 30-day mental challenge about positive mind control. Tell me about that.
That's right. I'm very interested in positive mind metaphysics, and I have up online what we call the 30-day mental challenge. Your listeners can just put that term into any search engine, 30-day mental challenge, you'll find it. It comes down to this. You make a contract with yourself, and you sign your name to that contract, that for 30 days, you vow to direct your thoughts to things that are promising, that are advancing, that are generous, that are nourishing, and you watch what happens. Now, a lot of people say to me, look, that kind of thing sounds very simple. How can it really change a person's life? I promise you, if you approach this simple exercise as though your life depends on it, you will see results, and people around you will see results. It is as simple as choosing a start date, writing out a contract, and signing it. You can find all the instructions very easily online. Just put in 30-day mental challenge. There's an email address there that people can use to reach me if you have questions. I will help you, but I encourage everybody to try this 30-day mental challenge. It can be life-changing.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. We will go to Earl in New York City. Hello there, Earl. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
My tale is this. In the spring of 68, it was already Friday the 13th, and when the school day got over, a whole bunch of us had to walk underneath this ladder.
Uh-oh.
And on my way home, a black cat crossed my path.
Jeez, you were getting it from all sides.
Yeah, but here's the interesting part. After the black cat, I found $20 on the sidewalk.
It does work sometimes.
Right.
Sometimes in reverse, Mitch, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe, or maybe it was bad luck for the person who lost the $20, you know. But there are some people who tell me they feel 13 is their lucky number. You know, there are folks who are into mysticism who
That's right.
gravitate to the number 13. So life can be funny that way.
Well, you know, many of the things we've talked about, I would not subscribe to all of them myself either. You know, I'm not really scared of Friday the 13th. I hate
right.
clowns.
Right.
A rabbit's foot I don't wear because I just think it's kind of gross.
Yeah.
You know, little stuff like that. You know, I do like the thing about blowing out all the candles in one breath, you know,
yeah.
and things like that. So I guess everybody has some that they truly believe in. Others don't. Listen to this crazy one. A drowned yeah. woman floats face up. A drowned man floats face down. Is that true?
Oh, gosh.
Who would know?
I don't think that's true. There are some funny ones, you know.
That's unbelievable.
Gather over the years. Yeah, yeah. Superstitions are really at their best, I think, when they teach us some humility. I knock on wood. I throw salt over my shoulder. Do I absolutely swear by it? No. But I think it is good for us modern people to acknowledge that we don't understand everything in the world. There are invisible dimensions to life, and sometimes a superstition can remind us of that. So that's the role I think that superstitions can play that's positive.
Listen to this one. If you shiver, someone is casting a shadow on your grave.
Yeah.
How could you have a grave if you're still alive?
Right. Your future grave, perhaps.
That's right.
You know, you found a lot of things like that in England, where every kind of an itch, every kind of a bump would be associated with something. You know, people didn't have access to medicine. There was no such thing as modern medicine. And they would look for these bodily symptoms as omens and signs. You know, once in a while, they would get something right, like your knees aching when it's going to rain. But other times, it could be very random.
It is unlucky to rock an empty rocking chair.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Oh, my God.
You're supposed to, if you do that, you'll attract an evil spirit to sit on the chair. Now, my grandmother told me that her mother, my great-grandmother, told her it was dangerous to swing one's feet when sitting on a chair or a bench, that it brought bad luck. And I said to her, why? And she never knew. She never knew. But it was an East European tradition that they brought to America.
Remember the old saying, when you get married, to make a happy marriage, the bride must wear something old, something new, something
right.
borrowed, and something blue.
Right.
You do that, you're going to have a great marriage.
Right, right.
I don't know why, but you will.
Well, there are also traditions like that that have to do with funerals. You're not supposed to wear cotton to a funeral. And the tradition of wearing black to a funeral came from ancient Rome, where death was considered contagious. So if you were around the dead, you were supposed to wear black as a warning to tell other people to stay away from you.
Let's go to Jackie in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Jackie. Thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning. George, you're a great bridge builder. And Mitch, you're a great architect of information. Thank you both.
Thank you, sir. Thanks. Very kind of you.
Listen, I have kind of an odd question here, but I figured I'm up on birthdays, and I follow that. That's kind of something I do each day, and I kind of like interconnect people's birthdays and things like that, just a little game I play. And today, February 3rd, at least here where I'm at, it's the great Kenneth Anger's birthday, one of my favorite figures in occult history. And Mitch, I know you know who he is. I just wanted to get your take on that. Thank you very much.
I'll share a funny story about Kenneth Anger, a great filmmaker and occult experimenter. A friend of mine met him out in California a few years ago, and Anger had on a New York Rangers jersey, the Rangers hockey team here in New York, but he had torn off the R and the S so that it was just a big sash that said anger on it.
I
that
love
was
it.
His hacking of a New York Rangers.
The guy's 80, well, tomorrow he's 89 years old.
Isn't that something?
Tomorrow's
he's
his birthday. Going. Happy birthday, Kenneth. He lives out here in Santa Monica.
Yeah, yeah. That's probably still has that jersey.
But he loves those little short films, the strange ones, doesn't he?
Yeah. He really occupied a remarkable place in recent history. I mean, he contracted music from Jimmy Page, the great guitarist of Led Zeppelin. He made these very enticing and frightening and sometimes disturbing movies that dealt with satanic themes, which was a fascination in the late 60s. And he influenced the culture.
He apparently has a tattoo on his chest that says Lucifer.
Oh, is that right? He would probably tell you, look, it just means light bearer. It's an alternate term for a divine messenger. That's what Madame Blavatsky, the founder of Theosophy, used to tell people. She would use the term Lucifer almost to provoke people into calling her a Satanist. And then she would insist that they didn't even understand the history of the word. It meant light bearer. It could be arguably found in the Bible. It was ancient Latin. So you know, that's another aspect that you find in folks like Kenneth Anger. They provoke. They're artists. They're performance artists. They're not necessarily spiritual figures. They're provocateurs.
Culver City, California. Jeff's turn on Coast to Coast. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Yeah, how you doing, George?
Good, Jeff.
Yes, it's very, you know, interesting. You mentioned earlier the Bush family is dabbling in the occult, and Jeb Bush is, you know, bad luck, or so it seems. You know, because as long as he's in this race and doesn't officially quit by hook or by crook, he will become president. Seems like someone.
I think it could be a brokered convention, and he might get the nomination.
Yeah, hey, that might be it. I don't know how it's going to happen, George, but it seems like someone somewhere has tampered with the methodology of the supernatural aura that swirls around that family. But Jeb Bush will be president if he stays in there. But my question is, Mr. Horowitz, given all of this modern-day evil going on now in the world in the 21st century, are there any new superstitions that you are aware of now in 2016 and beyond? And I'll take your answer off there.
Okay. Any new ones? Of course, you were talking about some of the games, the occult games, like Charlie and stuff, that I think came out of the new era of young people and social networking. But any new superstitions popping up?
Well, you things travel over the internet all the time. You know, you'll have stories about the Thin Man, and you know, things about.
Well, you're right. There it is. That's one.
Traveling. Yeah, kids tend to remake some of the ancient superstitions. I mean, Charlie's a fascinating example because that has been popular in Latin America for generations, and just very recently through YouTube, it traveled, you know, among American kids. So, you know, homemade Ouija boards and homemade fortune-telling devices, that's what I'm seeing as the new superstition among young kids nowadays.
And let us go to first-time caller Steve in Florida. Thanks for calling, Steve. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Great, Steven.
Great.
Hey, listen, I'm from Ukraine, Eastern Europe over there, Russia.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a few things there, like if you run over a cat, that means it's like power to you, you know what I mean? So, like, if you see a cat over there, you actually try to run it over. But if you hit a dog, if you run over a dog, basically you have to sell that car or truck because you won't be doing but nothing getting in wreck.
Wow.
And a friend of mine, yeah, he was driving like a dump truck, and you hit a dog, and the next day he flipped over. Basically,
Jeez.
He was alive, but the truck was ruined.
What about the superstition, Steve, about the Baba Yaga? The boogeyman.
It was just basically just to scare kids, you know?
Yeah.
They weren't like, if they didn't go eat their dinner, eat their vegetables, you know? And another thing is that, like you were saying, the sitting at the table, right? My grandpa always told me if you were eating and you're sitting at the table, basically you're making a shirt for the devil.
Jeez.
Wow.
It's interesting how superstitions are. Thanks, Steve. I appreciate you sharing those with us.
Wow.
Gosh. I guess every culture, every ethnicity has its own batch of superstitions, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And it's remarkable how they intersect sometimes. Every culture has a boogeyman, for example. You know, you were just talking about the boogeyman in the Ukraine, you know, whether you call it
Baba Yaga.
Yeah. Or the Dybbuk, or, you know, there are just names for some kind of a boogeyman figure everywhere. People in this country in the early 19th century, early 20th century, I'm sorry, used to talk about the idea that goblins were going to come and get kids. And there were these very popular poems warning kids that if they didn't eat their vegetables, do their homework, wash behind their ears, goblins, you know, could come and get them. There's just that whole idea that there's some boogeyman that's going to come and get you if you don't behave is endemic to almost every culture on Earth.
You know, my producer is infatuated with the Duendes myth that we talked about earlier.
Oh, interesting.
I mean, it's almost like the leprechauns in Ireland, isn't it?
You know, I have to tell you, it's quite remarkable in Ireland and in Central America and in other parts of the world, in Hawaii and parts of Polynesia. You can talk to people who are educated together, sophisticated people, and they will defend these beliefs. They will talk to you about the presence of fairies or little men or dwarves who live up in the hills, who commit acts of mischief. In Ireland several years ago, a highway was actually rerouted because it was thought to cross over a leprechaun bush or the lair of leprechauns, and it was considered bad luck, and it was taken very, very seriously. Times I've been in Central America, I have been very impressed with how seriously and committedly people will talk about these things. These beliefs are very deeply held, and I wouldn't look askance at them. There are things we don't know. There are strange things in the world, and when a sophisticated, successful person, as well as a working person or a homemaker, all tell the same stories, it's not just naivete. You know, there is knowledge that still gets passed around orally, and this idea of little men is found in every culture, from Polynesia to China to Latin America. It's interesting to me.
And they're not friendly either.
No. In fact, there was a cab driver in Central America who was telling me that one of these little men had crept up behind him once, and he was so frightened he couldn't even scream. It was like his voice was caught in his throat.
It was done.
He was terrified.
So
scared. And when I was walking in the woods, I kept thinking I was hearing footsteps behind me. It was not a good feeling.
I wonder if anybody's been so scared they couldn't talk. Like,
what this man was telling me. He said he wanted to drop us off where we were going, and he was going to turn around, and he was going to gun the engine out of there. He said he saw one of these guys, and he was so scared, he was literally petrified. Gee,
we're going to come back and take some final questions and stories for you, Mitch, and then I've got open lines later on Coast to Coast AM for a couple hours as well. Well, if you don't get on our final segment here with Mitch Horowitz, we do have open lines just ahead, and so we can take your calls for that, too. So not to worry. And welcome back. Mitch Horowitz with us and your calls in our final segment. Mitch, this is a great topic. It really is.
Yeah, it covers the whole world, and we can recognize these things in our very own lives.
What does Mercury retrograde have to do with any of these superstitions? Anything?
Well, it's interesting. That's an astrological cycle that occurs 3 to 4 times a year, in which, due to an optical illusion, basically, the planet Mercury seems to be running backwards. And it's supposed to be a time when communications go backwards, technology breaks, it's a bad time to travel. We just came out of a period of Mercury retrograde on January 25th. We're going into another one on April 28th, which is going to last about 3 weeks. Now, anecdotally, if you talk to people, they will tell you that during those periods, travel plans go upside down, communication is bad, things get misunderstood, and another thing to watch for, people come back from your past. That can sometimes be a good thing because it may be the opportunity to revisit something, to solve an old problem, to undo the knots in an old relationship or find closure. So people have negative associations with Mercury retrograde, but there's a positive side to it as well. In a sense, it's supposed to be a period of time when everything runs backwards. And there's a lot of people in Silicon Valley who will tell you that anecdotally, that's exactly what seems to happen. Technology, everything else goes upside down.
These superstitions, do they hit mainstream religion too?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the fact is, there has been a tradition of astrology, for example, within Judaism going back to late antiquity. Reincarnation, ESP, all these things occur in varying forms in Judaism and Catholicism. We call them by different names. Instead of channeling within the Catholic Church, we might say locutions. There's different terminologies, but they're different terminologies for the same kinds of things. So these beliefs exist both within and without the mainstream faiths.
Let's take some more calls here. Joe in the Bronx, welcome to Coast to Coast. Hey, Joseph.
How you doing, George?
Good.
I wanted to ask your guest where the superstition, if you may, originates from when you get someone a new wallet for a gift, placing a dollar in that wallet.
Oh, yeah. That's a Chinese superstition. For Chinese New Year, for example, parents or grandparents might give a little red envelope with a dollar in it or some form of currency to a kid. It's just a goodwill gesture that tells you, you know, look, may you be prosperous. It's an ancient Chinese tradition that we've embraced here in the West.
Well, you know, as they say, it's really more bad luck for the person who doesn't get the money, isn't it?
Yes, right. That's like our friend who was telling us that he found $20 on Friday the 13th. Somebody may be listening saying, hey, I lost $20 on Friday the 13th.
Okay, let's go to John in Sebring, Florida now. Hey, John, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Thanks, George. Wonderful show again, George, and your guest, Mitch.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you about in your travels around the world. First, I'm going to ask a question, then make a statement about tall buildings using the number, not using the number 13. How many buildings around the world on average do you see where they wouldn't use the number 13? In Miami, I used to construct 33-story condominium buildings, and the number 13 was not even in the architectural plan. So I'll get off and listen to you, all right?
That's terrific. You know, it's very interesting. I couldn't break it down into percentages, but I find it all the time that in hotels, apartment buildings, casinos, they omit the number 13. One of my favorite places in the world is the Edgar Cayce Foundation in Virginia Beach. I'm going to be out there speaking on April 1st, actually, and there's a hotel right near there where most of the guests and speakers stay. Doesn't have a 13th floor. I took a photograph once of the elevator bank and put it online. I may do it again this evening. You see it all the time. We claim to be rational folks, but many of our tall buildings do not include a 13th floor.
Who designed it that way? Architects? Or...
Yeah, architects and construction firms will do it that way. A hotel does not want customers complaining that they don't want to stay on the 13th floor, something you and I were talking about on Beyond Belief. Nancy Reagan arranged to have the house number of the Reagan's retirement home changed so that it wasn't 666. You know, people do these things all the time. And hotels and architectural companies, they don't want a superstition to get in the way of a happy guest or a happy buyer. People don't like to buy condos on the 13th floor, so they just write it right into the plans. You'll see it on elevator banks. Buttons very often go from 12 to 14. People don't notice it, but if you look, you'll start to see it.
You know, Mitch, when these superstitions crop up, do they ever get to the point where they affect somebody mentally?
Well, it can be. You know, I mean, there are times where superstition can play upon maybe obsessive tendencies that somebody has, but there's usually some problem that predicates it. It's not the superstition itself, but somebody might be suffering from some sort of ritualistic behavior or an obsessive compulsive disorder, and just about anything, you know, can take on the form of a distracting, aggressively repetitive behavior, whether it's constant hand washing or the need to count certain things. Usually there's some underlying cause, but interestingly enough, within the world of superstition, there's a belief that evil spirits and vampires are, in effect, obsessive compulsive, and that if you're being chased by some sort of a demon or a vampire, you could, for example, throw a handful of pebbles behind you, and the evil entity will have to stop to count each one of them before chasing you. So even within superstitions, there's a belief that evil beings are obsessive compulsive.
And garlic, of course, keeps away vampires.
Yes.
Keeps away just about everything, honestly.
That's right. You keep away everybody, friend and foe alike.
Josh in Texas, east of the Rockies. Hey, Josh, go ahead.
Hey, George, Mitch, wonderful
hey.
Show.
Thank
I'm
you.
Listening quite often when I travel at night. But the question I have for you is, Mitch, when, you know, a group of individuals start to really hang on to a superstition. It really kind of gives rise to the religion of an area, such you think of like the Hindu religion and their myriads of gods, but also in Western religions, like you spoke about Judaism and Catholicism having their own separate branches of mystic and superstitious areas. But I wanted you to speak to that. And a quick superstition that my family honors every year is eating black-eyed peas on New Year's to give health and wealth and prosperity in the new year. That was passed down from my grandmother. I don't know where she got it, but that's just one thing that I carry on with my family. And I'll take your answer off the air. Thanks very much, George.
Okay,
Mitch.
Thank you, too.
Oh, that's wonderful, that observation about black-eyed peas. Now, I wonder if the caller's family is of German ancestry, because there is an old German custom of eating lentils on New Year's. It's supposed to connote a complete year. Anything that you eat that's round is supposed to connote completeness, fullness. Now, it may be that folks of German ancestry moved to the South and the food changed a little bit, but there's the same tradition right there.
We have Ben in Fort Worth, Texas. Nope, Ben's not ready yet, but Al in Louisiana, he is. Go ahead, Al.
Yeah, good morning, guys. Yeah. I remember that wishbone thing. That was a big deal when I was...
Oh, yeah, loved it.
But I want to ask about the evil eye. What's the origin of that, and how does it work? I mean, does the person have to be angry at you or be feel threatened or what?
Well, you'll even find references to the evil eye in the Old Testament. It goes back to deepest antiquity, just this idea that somebody could cast some kind of a curse on you using some sort of dark or sometimes demonic methods. It's passed through every culture on earth, and there's all kinds of traditions that are supposed to protect you from it. It's interesting. You know, it probably is a representation of an idea that we have in modern life today, that thoughts are things, that if you're thinking something negative about another person, there could be just some little wrinkle there that makes something happen, that our thoughts are not just purely matters of the gray cells in our brain, but that we all participate in some sort of a higher or collective mind, or what the philosopher Emerson called an oversoul. So I think the evil eye was an early representation of that instinct that we had, that we all belong to some sort of common mind, and if you're thinking negative thoughts about somebody, there could be a result.
What is your favorite superstition?
Favorite superstition, that's a good one. I suppose knocking on wood is my favorite superstition, and I do it all the time. Ancient people believed that trees were occupied by spirits, and sometimes trees could be occupied by malevolent spirits or mischievous fairies or something like that. And the idea is that if you knock on wood for good luck, you're kind of shaking out the evil fairies. Now, I don't think about that in a literal sense when I knock on wood, but knocking on wood is just one of those everyday things that I find myself doing, because it's a way of reminding myself and maybe people around me that life is filled with unexpected things. Life may be filled with unseen things that we don't fully understand. And it's a show of humility. And I also feel it kind of binds me and all of us to our ancient ancestors.
We're going to Las Vegas now. Church is with us. Hey, Church, go ahead.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
Good.
How you doing?
Hey.
All is well.
Actually, on that, about the knock on wood, I heard that it was something to do with Jesus.
Yeah. It's interesting.
And I do have a comment after that.
Oh, please, yeah. You know, some people believe that knocking on wood is the equivalent of knocking on the cross for good luck. The truth is, it's a belief that's pre-Christian. It goes back to very ancient primeval times, and yet sometimes in different localities or in different eras, these things will take on different flavors and meanings. So to medieval Christians, it was believed that knocking on wood is an ancient habit they wanted to preserve, and people came to see it as knocking on the cross for good luck.
Okay, Church, go ahead.
My comment was, as far as that god that you mentioned, the African god with the rain and the night.
Jungle, yeah.
what was his name?
Chongo.
Chongo. Okay, so Chongo. Now, you were saying that your grandmother said it was Jewish, and then
that's
you
right.
found out that it actually was originated African, correct?
That's right. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Now, am I not correct when I say that Judaism actually originated in Africa?
Well, I think that's a good observation, actually. I mean,
So it being, you know, originated in Africa,
yep.
and then later on, you know, the white pale people became Jewish. So, and then maybe that's how that came about.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, if you follow the footsteps of Moses, I think what you're saying is historically right. You know, Judaism, along with much else of civilization, originated in Africa. My sense is that probably here in modern times, what happened was you had people who were enslaved in the Middle Passage and were brought to the New World. You had immigrants in the New World. People intermingled, and probably some of the people who were thrown into slavery intermingled with some of the immigrants, and they exchanged some customs and ideas. So probably, you know, here in our modern world, that's how that tradition came to cross-pollinate from African culture to Jewish culture. That would be my assumption.
Email in from Judith. Let me read a portion of it for us, Mitch. It says, "Hi, I wanted to let you know that a bird flew into my dear friend's apartment one morning, was trapped at the front window trying to escape. I managed to capture it in a big jar that I used to trap insects in, and I set it free. About a month later, my beloved friend passed away. I believe it was a sign that I had to prepare to set my friend free. Superstition, perhaps your mother was right." My mother.
Very interesting.
Superstition, of course.
Yeah, and also, of course, the caller did the humane thing and was able to save this creature. So I would view the a death, a passing of another person, is always a tragic and somber event. But this person acted ethically. She did something right. And I think she has reason to feel comforted about the entire situation, even though a passing is always a very somber thing.
Let's go to Clawson, Michigan. It's Randy's turn. Happens to be a first-time caller. Hi, Randy. Go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Miller. This is, I love your show. I listen to it every night.
Thank you.
As much as I can. I got two questions for Mitch.
Okay.
The first one is opening an umbrella in inside the house.
The old umbrella.
That's one of my very favorites. Now, it's funny. There's two sides to that superstition, a sort of esoteric side and a practical side. The esoteric side is that in ancient India and in ancient China, it was believed that the sun's rays could contain evil spirits. So wealthy folk are sometimes pictured in bas reliefs and ancient carvings as carrying umbrellas, not to protect themselves from rain in these arid environments, but to protect themselves from the demons that were sometimes thought to be hiding in the sun's rays. Now, in the Victorian age, when the first modern umbrellas came into use for protection against the rain, people's homes were crowded and packed with all these precious little vases and baubles. So as a matter of practicality, yeah, it was a bad idea to let an umbrella spring open. So it's one of these funny things where there was an esoteric ancient belief, and then it translated into a very obvious practical modern belief.
Great. And you had one more for us?
Just one more, yeah. See, my wife is from the Philippines, and every time when we were over there, or when, you know, when I lived there, she always swept at night, sweep the house at night, but she always said never sweep outside the door because it would be really bad luck if you just sweep the dirt outside the door, and it'd be very bad luck. So,
that's interesting.
Ancient Philippine myth, I think.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting is in the South here in America, you'll find a belief that sweeping outside the door is actually really good luck because sometimes people might try to curse you by putting some bad dust or something that they've cursed or some object that could be harmful to the household outside the door. So you want to sweep very thoroughly. So I don't know what the translation of that is to the ritual in the Philippines, but in the South, here in America, the sweeping of the threshold is actually always considered very good luck.
All right, Mitch, the clock's got us, but keep in touch with us, okay?
Yes, sir. Great to be with you.
Mitch Horowitz, website's all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, Sound Off Open Lines. Get ready.